Hey, hey, Heat Nation. Welcome back to Heat Who's Gonna Heat. I'm your host, Kyle Russell, still here to talk a little about our favorite NBA team, the Miami Heat, who currently find themselves in a 7-game losing streak. That part's not as much fun. But I'm still here, I'm still gonna talk about it, and still try to crack some jokes and chuckle along the way. Game plan for today's episode. First, I actually want to talk about this Terry Rozier acquisition, since, like, chronologically it kind of fits before the rest of the games, and then also so that way at least there's something good to talk about at the top of the episode. After that, not as much good stuff. Miami went 0-4 last week, so now on a 7-game losing streak, then talking about what's going wrong on the losing streak, and then we'll look ahead as usual to the upcoming games this week, and we cross our fingers and hope to break the losing streak. So, first, let's go to last Tuesday, after I had published the last episode, not too long after I had finished it, that news came out that the Miami Heat were making a trade for one Terry Rozier from the Charlotte Hornets. The Heat sending out just Kyle Lowry and a first-round pick. The specifics on the pick, it's a 2027 lottery-protected pick, meaning that if it falls within 1 through 14, if the Heat have a really bad year in 2027, then the Heat keep their 2027 pick, and it conveys in 2028 unprotected. Doesn't matter how the Heat finish then. And the other way that this pick could potentially convey, Miami also owes a 2025, I believe it's lottery-protected as well, to the Oklahoma City Thunder after some various trades. And if that doesn't convey in 2025, then it automatically conveys unprotected in 26. And then if that ends up happening because of the Stepien rule, they can't trade their 27 picks, then it automatically converts to an unprotected 28. So essentially, they gave out a pick in such a way that it still kind of aligns with the pick that they already owe in 25. And if that conveys, then, you know, they would have their 26. 27 would convey to Charlotte, if, you know, provided the usual protections, and then they would hit their 28, and then they could trade their 29. Or if things don't end up that way and 26 conveys, 28 conveys, they would have to keep their 29 and could trade their 30. So it's a little weird because there's a number of different ways that these picks could eventually convey, and then how that would affect Miami's draft picks, like what they themselves would draft versus what they could offer. But at the end of the day, like, it, for just one pick and one expiring contract in Kyle Lowry, Miami really did not give up that much, especially when you compare Rozier to Lowry. And essentially, where the main reason that he did this is because of the scoring upgrade that Rozier had, more recently has shown to be over Kyle Lowry, mainly from the areas that he's a more willing shooter. He's a little bit quicker, so he can get to the rim. Lowry was not really doing much of that. Essentially, Lowry's drives to the rim were more so along the lines of, let me get ahead of the person and then try to stop and have them come into my pass. That way I can get a foul out of it and try to, you know, get an and one with it. Whereas Rozier's literally just going by the dude and then just getting straight to the rim. So the speed upgrade has been noticeably different there. And then there's just also the willingness to shoot, because that was also a frequent complaint of Kyle Lowry's, that he would have games where he'd have, you know, 2-3 field goal attempts, let alone actual makes. Whereas Rozier, at least he's going to gun it a little bit. And the last surefire upgrade from Lowry to Rozier is just in the age department. Like, again, Kyle Lowry, all the credit for still being in the league at his age. It was like 37, 38. Like, that's still really impressive for a guard of his size to still be playing professional basketball. But Rozier's 29. That's, you know, 8-9 year difference. Rozier's still in his prime and might be able to contribute more consistently versus Kyle Lowry, where, I mean, he's not going to get any better. He's arguably only going to get worse as farther time saps more out of him. So those are the positive parts to the trade. In terms of, like, the negatives, Rozier is more of a combo guard than necessarily a point guard. So he can do a little playmaking, but he also likes to do a little bit of scoring. I don't necessarily know if I would actually count that too much as a negative, but it's mainly more so just to say, like, I would not expect a point guard, like a playmaker first type guard from this trade. This is more of like what we had with Gabe Vincent, for example, where, yeah, he can give you a little playmaking, but he can also just be off the ball and try to be more of a scoring threat, which that fits what Miami's trying to do. The big difference, though, is I don't know if Rozier is as good of a defender as Gabe Vincent. Rozier, for the most part, he had a history when he was with the Boston Celtics to begin his career of being at least like a solid defender for them. But they did eventually move on from him for a decent reason. Well, they were trying to get Kemba Walker at the time. But since then, though, he's been at Charlotte. Charlotte has not been a great defensive team. So it's kind of like chicken and the egg, right? With Charlotte, did they become a worse defensive team because Rozier's not a great defender? Or was Rozier not being a great defender because what was the point when you're on a terrible Charlotte Hornets team? Well, we're gonna get to see what that ends up being over the next few weeks. But I do think given his speed and his willingness to buy into the Heat system, which that I'm kind of assuming a little bit just because he is a self-reported big Dwayne Wade fan. So my hope is, if you're a big fan of Dwayne Wade, and Dwayne Wade's like, yo, this is the Heat, this is my culture, this is my house, that you're going to get buy-in from Rozier. So just from a being younger standpoint and being faster standpoint versus Lowry, not from an IQ standpoint, I think, because I do give a lot of credit to Lowry's IQ, and I think that's a big reason why he was still playing at his age. But to go back to Rozier, with the speed and with the buy-in, I think he could be at least comparable in defensive impact to what Lowry was given. Or at the very least, maybe Rozier can use his speed to stick alongside ball handlers better than most of the players in the Heat roster. So I want to try to find a little bit of optimism there. So to recap at the end, positive, definitely should be a better scoring threat from the point guard position. And then the more of the neutral, maybe negative, it could be a drop in defense. And it may not give us necessarily the playmaking that at times we have looked at from the point guard position. But overall, I still think it's a really great move for Miami. And it essentially lets them cover a lot of different bases. So, for example, they upgraded the point guard position. They needed to do that. They didn't want to sacrifice too much future flexibility. They didn't do that. So, Rozier, beyond just this season, has two more years on his contract. So, essentially, with that pick being two years out in 2027, and with the contract being two more years, blah, 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 what it results in is essentially we kind of have this same situation that's going to repeat in about 2 years. Except rather than Lowry being the big expiring, Rozier's going to be the big expiring. And then it'll be the question of, okay, we have a 31-year-old Terry Rozier. Do we want to re-sign him? Do we want to package him for other stuff? In 2 years, Miami will have one more pick available, so they'll be in a similar pick situation. It's a really great move just from that standpoint, right? Didn't really give up much. And you can more or less be in the same good position in another 2 years. Then who knows until then, maybe Rozier moves himself up and you want to keep him. Maybe he moves himself down, easy to trade off of him. Maybe he gives you another good playoff run either this year or next year. We'll have to see how that plays out. But while that has been an overall great move, it has not translated to the court yet. Which means now I gotta talk about the bad stuff. Miami went 0-4 last week, and this was all after the Terry Rozier acquisition, and brings their overall record to 24-23. So we're almost at .500. Hate to see it. We're gonna blow through these games relatively quick. First, we go to last Wednesday. Miami hosted the Memphis Grizzlies in a game that they lost 96-105. This one just absolutely infuriated me. Injury report from Miami, Jaquez was still out, but for the Grizzlies, they had an entire starting lineup out. Like, you just go down the list of their best players, John Morant out, Desmond Bain out, Marcus Smart out, Steven Adams out, Brandon Clark out. I'm probably missing one, I think like Derrick Rose, and there's probably another one I'm missing on top of it, which is to say that the Heat had no excuse or reason for losing this game, and yet they found a way to do it anyway. To recap the game, a poor offensive start by Miami allowed the Grizzlies to stay in. So, like, rather than building a double-digit lead, they just kind of hung around, like, a few points above. And then the Grizzlies started getting hot from three, eventually taking a 7-point lead going into the half. Miami only scored 42 points in the game. And you could already see it going along the lines of what the Grizzlies wanted to do. Hey, play enough defense and then bomb enough threes and hope to make enough threes that the game's competitive. And it went exactly to that script for the Grizzlies. In the second half, the deficit hovered around 7 until an 8-0 run in 1 minute by the Grizz pushed the Heat down 14 going into the fourth. And in the fourth quarter itself, the Heat, to their credit, chipped away at the lead and got it down to 2. It was 98-96 with about 2 minutes left. And then the Heat just went completely cold. The Grizzlies scored the last 7 points. And we get to our final score, 96-105. Not quite the debut for the Heat's new acquisition that they were all probably hoping. Rozier came off the bench for this one. He would start the other three games. But for this first game, came off the bench, not looking too great. But player of the game for this, I ended up just giving it to Caleb Martin because somebody had to, I guess. 15 points, 4 rebounds, an assist, 2 steals, a block, decent stat line. On 4 of 8 from the field, 3 of 5, 3-point range, 4-4 from the free throw line. A minus 8 overall, but the only one that was both productive, like did something a little everywhere, and somewhat efficient, which, again, says a lot about how this game got out of hand, and it was a really, really bad loss. Like, this is, yeah, no, certainly. This is certainly the worst loss of the week, like, in context and everything. Wasn't the biggest deficit of a loss, we'll get to that one soon, but this one was the winnable game of the week, what should have been the winnable game of the week, and they just blew it. Stats for this game. Like I had already mentioned a little bit earlier, the Grizzlies really won this off of bombing from three-point range and having it go in, going 17-36, good for 47%, versus Miami's 11-34, good for 32%. And then the other part that really sucked for Miami, just not maximizing opportunities. They won the turnover battle, 17-18. It's a bad turnover game for Miami, but hey, they still won it. Though they lost points off of turnovers, 14-24. A good bit of those 24 points for the Grizzlies being off of fast breaks. But fast breaks has been a problem for the Heat all year. But just to say, not capitalizing off of those opportunities off turnovers. And then similarly, the Heat won offensive rebounds, 11-7, but lost second chance points, 6-11. So more turnover. They had less turnovers and more offensive rebounds, but lost both of the points that derive from those battles. Just to say, again, like I mentioned, not maximizing opportunities. And then the mention for this game, Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero, Jimmy Butler, Terry Rozier, the only players that had 10-plus field goal attempts for the Heat in this game, but none of them got to 20 points. And only Tyler Hero was 50-plus percent on from the field. So he was the only one being somewhat efficient. But he had 4 turnovers. And then similarly, Jimmy as well, 4 turnovers, barely made that qualifier at 10 field goal attempts. So really bad Jimmy Butler game, bad Bam game, somewhat bad Hero game. And, you know, you got to give Rozier a pass. He, like, literally, the trade happened Tuesday. He got on a flight and got there like late Tuesday, early Wednesday morning, and then he was playing in a game Wednesday night. That's a quick turnaround. And speaking of quick turnarounds, let's go ahead and move on to the next game and see how quick we can do this. Miami, Thursday, second night of a back-to-back, hosts the Boston Celtics in a game that they lost 110-143. I wanted to emphasize the amount of points that they gave up in that game. Injury report, Jaime Jaquez out, Kevin Love out. Recap for the game. Honestly, and it sounds like an excuse, but hey, I'm a Heat podcast. I'm going to find good excuses for the Heat. And I think this is a valid excuse. The Heat looked like a team that came off of the second night of a back-to-back where they dropped that first game, a really bad loss that they shouldn't have lost. So coming in a little dejected, demoralized, de-energized. Well, the Celtics looked like a team that had 2 days off. And they shot out of their freaking minds from the start to the end. It did not let up whatsoever. It was like plus 13 in the first quarter for the Celtics, tied in the second, and then plus 10 for the Celtics in the third and fourth quarters. Like, even in garbage time, they were just still pouring it on the Heat. Kind of looked like a team. Again, they had the rest advantage. And they probably also had a little bit of a mental advantage still from what the Heat did to them last year. So, yeah, great win for the Celtics. Really, really dejecting loss for the Heat. Player of the game, Haywood Highsmith. I gave it to this one for this one. 14 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist. 5 of 7 from the field, 4 of 4 from 3-point range. and looking solid as a starter for that in the four spot for Miami. So Miami did roll out a new starting lineup for this game with Terry Rozier, Tyler Hero in the backcourt, Jimmy, Haywood, Bam for the front court. And at least offensively, it got off to a better start. I'll talk about that a little bit more later on. Defensively is where there's now concerns with the starting lineup. Moving on to stats. Really, I only got one stat for this game. The Celtics shot 51 of 80 from the field, good for 64%, to the Heat's 42 of 94, good for 45%. That is a 19% difference in field goal shooting. If you get to double digits, like 10%, that's a really, really tough statistical category to lose and still just try to be competitive, let alone win the game. But 19%? Nah. Nah. Nothing else matters beyond that. Nothing else matters beyond just they shot crazy, the Heat shot meh, the difference was absolutely staggering. Nothing else matters. Honorable mention for this game, Terry Rozier came off the bench for the first game. He did start in that Celtics game, so very quickly they're trying to get him into the starting lineup. The offense did look better, but now there's concerns about the defense and about production from the bench. So, got more stuff to talk about. But yeah, that's about as quick as I can get through that. Next, the Heat would play at the New York Knicks last Saturday, a game that they also lost 109 to 125. And the worst part for this, the Heat were fully healthy. They actually got Jaime Jaquez back finally last Saturday, as well as Kevin Love from like an illness or something like that from the Thursday game. So the Heat were completely healthy and they still got smacked. So recap for the game. Heat got out to a solid 19-9 lead, but the Knicks benched helped them storm back. The Heat only up 30-27 after the first quarter. The second was very much a back-to-forth affair, tied 51-51 with about 3 minutes left. But then the Knicks closed the second quarter on a 10-0 run to take a 10-point lead at the half. In the third quarter, the lead fluctuated around 10, but in the last 2 minutes, the Heat did tie the game on a 12-2 run. But Julius Randle hit a buzzer-beater three to take a 3-point lead going into the fourth. Still felt pretty good overall. He got back into the game. But then the fourth quarter came around, mainly bench unit to start the fourth, and the Knicks opened that quarter on a 30-12 run to be up 21 points and essentially blow this game out in the last few minutes. Player of the game, this one, in all seriousness, is actually I have a good one that I could give this to, Jimmy Butler. 28 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists on 11 of 20 from the field, 1 of 3 from 3-point range, 5 of 6 from the free throw line, and 3 steals. So he was looking active on defense, he looked engaged on offense, no turnovers, only two fouls. This was actually like the engaged Jimmy that has been talked about over the last few weeks. Like, hey Jimmy, can you start playing more like a regular season superstar? He was closer to that this game, but it just didn't matter because they still got blown out. Stats for this game, so if you're ever on Basketball Reference, they have like four factors. Well, NBA.com has the four factors as well. These are like the four stats that correlate the most with winning a game. Miami lost all of them in this Knicks game. They lost shooting 47% to 52%. They lost turnovers, committed 8 to New York 7. You know, good turnover game by Miami, but did not enforce that on the Knicks. Only 7 turnovers. They lost offensive rebounds 8-11. They lost free throw attempts 16-26. Again, like, there were pockets of the game where they were in it, you know, beginning of the first quarter, near the end of the third quarter. But by the end of the game, this was just a beat down across the board. Honorable mention, I guess Hero going 4 of 11, Duncan going 5 from 11. They had good from 3-point range. They had good 3-point shooting nights. I'd like to see that. That's about it. Oh, yeah, and the Heat also still don't have anybody to guard Jalen Brunson. So given that New York has improved with the acquisition of OG Anunoby, that could be a real problem for the Heat if they meet up in the playoffs again. Okay, last loss to get through. Last night, Miami hosting the Phoenix Suns in a game that they lost 105 to 118. Injury report, they were healthy going into the game. However, Duncan Robinson would only play a few minutes and sat out the second half with illness. Otherwise, both sides healthy. Recap the game. Starters got the Heat to a 15-8 early lead, but the bench coughed it up, and the Heat were down 25-33 after letting the Suns close the first quarter on a 7-0 run. And then they started the second quarter, continuing that 7-0 run up to a 13-0 run to have themselves up 13, and it stayed around there most of the second quarter until the halftime. Third quarter, Suns just continued to expand their lead, the Heat eventually being down 26 going into the fourth quarter, letting the Suns score 100 points in three quarters. Again, illustrating the defense just really has not been there. And then in the fourth itself, the Heat, I consider this a little bit fool's gold because, again, you're down 26 going into the fourth quarter. You're more or less over. But the Heat, to however much credit you want to give them, did chip the lead down to 11. So that's a plus 15. But that was as close as it got. Again, I consider that like a fake comeback. You didn't even get it to single digits. And the Heat ultimately lost the game. Player of the game, this one I am also giving to Jimmy as well. 26 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists on 7-12 from the field, 2-2 from 3-point range, 10-10 from the free throw line, 1 steal, no turnovers, only 1 foul. Again, between the New York game and this game, it looks like Jimmy is starting to ramp himself up. The only problem is it's not translating to wins or on court deficits. So for example, in his time, yes, it's single game plus minus, but in his time, despite that production, Jimmy Butler still a minus 17. So all that good stuff he was doing and the Heat were still getting outscored for it. Stats for this game, they lost shooting 39% to 49%. So, you know, again, that double digit difference in field goal percentage, really hard to overcome and usually leads to you getting blown out. They lost turnovers 11-7, did not do a great job of forcing the Suns into turnovers at all. They lost offensive rebounding 8-10 and just didn't make up the difference at the free throw line. Miami, they did go 25-25 from the free throw line. That part was good to the Suns. I think it was like 15-17, something like that. But that's just not a big enough gap to make up the field goal difference, the turnover difference, the offensive rebounding difference, the possession difference, essentially. Nor did the Heat really bomb it from three. Heat 14 of 36 versus the Suns 14 of 40. So the Heat a little more efficient, I guess, but not making up any ground there. And to no surprise, you end up getting blown out double digits. Honorable mention for this game, Terry Rozier had his best game so far in a Heat uniform. 21 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists on 8 of 14 from the field, 4 of 6 from 3-point range, 1 of 1 free throw line. But similarly with Jimmy, despite all that positive production, they were still getting outscored. Rozier a team worst minus 21 for a single game plus minus. And now the Heat are on a season high 7-game losing streak. So, feels a little bit deja vu-y because I did this segment last week when it was only a 3-game losing streak. And it was like, it felt a little more cute at the time, right? Like, hey, we're on a 3-game losing streak. It's not too good. Let's talk about it. Now it's like a 5-alarm fire with a 7-game losing streak. And we're going to talk about it some more. A little bit of context real quick. This is the longest losing streak for the Miami Heat since the spring 2008. Where they eventually ended up, I mean, this was before my tenure as a fan. So first off, this is the longest losing streak I've ever seen within my Miami Heat fandom. Yay, I get to see new stuff this year. Just not the stuff I wanted. But it is to say, the context is 2008 spring. That was when Dwayne Wade got injured. The Heat had an absolutely terrible record because they were trying to get the second overall pick. And then ultimately backfired because it was Michael Beasley. But to say that the last time the Heat did something this bad was when they were actively trying to lose or were just so bad that they ultimately ended up with the second overall pick. So, not great. This also is the longest losing streak of Eric Spoelstra's tenure as a head coach, so I'm sure he's not too happy with it either. So, nobody's happy. So, what's going wrong here? And the interesting part is it's been one side of the court or the other throughout this losing streak. So the first four games, I would say, it was on the offensive side. The Heat were struggling to break 100 points. Three games into that losing streak was when they went ahead and pulled the trigger to bring in Terry Rozier, hoping that it would improve the offense. And yet that first game against the Memphis Grizzlies, Rozier was there. They still failed to score 100 points. So maybe chalk that up to transition. Like I mentioned earlier, he had just gotten there, blah, blah, blah. Wasn't even in the starting lineup. That wasn't until the Thursday game. But since he has been put in the starting lineup for the last three games of this seven-game losing streak, the offense has been better. They've scored 100 points every game. The Celtics won, they scored 110, so that might be something. But the defense has just fallen off a cliff. 143 against the Celtics, 125 against the Knicks, 118 against the Suns. So, you've managed to plug one hole, and then, two or three more popped up on the other end. And where the defense has been particularly bad has been in opponent effective field goal percentage and opponent turnover percentage. So the Heat throughout this year, one of the hallmarks of their defense was turnovers. Get your opponent to give up the ball, you end the possession right there immediately, whether that's a steal, a block, drawing a charge, getting an offensive foul, just something to get the ball out of the opponent's hands. Specifically over these last four games since the Terry Rozier acquisition, because I wanted to focus on that as like a clear before and after. The Heat have been 25th in opponent turnover percentage, whereas before they were like top 10 in opponent turnover percentage. So massive drop there means the opponent has that many more possessions to work with, while the Heat have less to work with on their end. Plus, the Heat, like I mentioned, with the Grizzlies game, the Heat like to get points off of turnovers. That's an easy source of offense for them. So less turnovers also means less points off of turnovers, just means less offense overall, and therefore less winning. And then the other part, the 28th in opponent effective field goal percentage. So the Heat have not been a great team in terms of opponent effective field goal percentage throughout the year. Usually they're hovering around like below average, maybe around 20 or so, but they're all the way down to 28th. Like, that's just too far down. And usually the Heat would try to gimmick their defense with other stuff, right? Like, they might let opponents shoot relatively well or above average, but they're getting turnovers. They're ending possessions with rebounds. Like, they were limiting opponent opportunities. That's going the other way because of the opponent turnover percentage. And then on top of that, the opponents are shooting even better against them than before. So, it all comes together and makes a really bad defense. So, what can the Heat do from here? So, kind of like last week, you either look internally or you look externally. Internally, I still think it might be worth it. I don't think the Heat would go in this direction at this point, given that Rozier has been starting the last few games. But they might go in a different direction where you do Tyler Hero at the 1, Duncan at the 2, Butler at the 3, Haywood 4, Bam at the 5. And essentially let Rozier more so run the bench. He does have some experiences that you put Duncan in the starting lineup alongside Hero, and you essentially just try to space things out from the start of the game. Hope that that Duncan gets going better, let him run some two-man game with Bam. You also do some Hero Bam pick and rolls, both of which essentially you're just trying to juice the offense by getting your two best shooters out on the court to start the game, and then hoping that there's enough playmaking to make everything run. But the other way that you could do it is rather than Rozier go to the bench, you send Tyler Hero to the bench. And this one has been really popular amongst Heat fandom from what I've seen. And I do think that it could be a legitimate option if things continue to go badly. Because the argument essentially is you go back to when they were the first seed a few years ago, and part of the formula for that working was Jimmy Bam starting, getting the offense going well. Rozier can still help with that. And then Tyler Hero runs the bench, keeping the offense going, and then Hero would eventually come in and close. So that's how they got the first seed. And so essentially the argument is you just replicate that here, except rather than having Kyle Lowry like in 2021-22, you got Terry Rozier instead. And you still are trying to get to the same thing. You want to start Duncan, so then that way he can run two-man game with Bam and try to get some threes to knock down and feel confident and look more like the Duncan from earlier in the season, where he was looking really solid as a starter. And then it gives Hero the room to operate and be a dynamic scorer. And then hopefully the offense has enough juice and has enough rhythm going throughout the game that by the time you get to the closing lineup where Hero is going to be closing alongside Bam, Jimmy, maybe Rozier as well, or Duncan, or whoever else, or I don't know. Spoelstra can figure it out the rest of the closing lineup. But just to say, you might have a better offensive rhythm by then, and then you can actually close these games out with wins instead of losses. But personally, I would be open to the idea of Hero going to the bench at this point, just to see how that works, because as a starter, it still doesn't seem to mesh well between like him, Jimmy, and Bam. They don't play off each other too much. Well, I will also say Hero, to his credit, has been pushing more off-ball activity, but then it becomes a question of, is that the best use for Tyler? Because then he doesn't have the ball in his hands as much and can't do other things that he's good at, which goes back to the argument that he should come off the bench. I still think it would probably take a few more games to get to that point, especially considering Tyler's age, his contract, the politics of it all, his own mentality of it. But the counter-argument to that is, and I'm not the first one to point this out, Manu Ginobili famously came off the bench, and then within Miami Heat history, Goran Dragic, Dwayne Wade, Alonzo Mourning, they all came off the bench. Counter to that counter, they were all older players in the later parts of their career. Tyler is still very much in the early part of his career. So there's a lot of back and forth you can go with on it, which is why I'm not certain that they moved Tyler to the bench, but that's an option, and it might be the most appealing choice to make right now. Other things for internal adjustments, and these are things that they've already kind of started doing. So I talked before about how Josh Richardson should probably be on the outside looking into the rotation. That looks to be the case. He seems to be the 10th man for the team. So unless, like, a Duncan doesn't play in the second half of that Suns game, that was when Josh got in. It looks productive for his time. But also, when you go back to, like, the Knicks game last Saturday or the Celtics game last Thursday, that's where you saw Josh was more or less cut out of the rotation until things got out of hand. So that change already seems to be made, that the rotation's being cut and Josh ended up being the one on the outside. And then the only other potential internal improvement I could think of is just a weight. I mean, you did just acquire Terry Rozier. You've played 4 games in the week that you've had him. That's a lot of adjustment really quickly, and it may just take time to get everything to gel properly. The only problem with that is the Heat are running out of time very, very quickly before things get out of hand and they're stuck in the play-in tournament again. So outside of internal adjustments, then the only other option is to look externally, trying to make a trade. And at this point, given that they already made the point guard trade to bring in Rozier over Lowry, the only other place that the Heat could realistically look to make a trade would be to try to upgrade the 4. Mainly, Caleb Highsmith, I like him a lot, but he is still only 6'7", so if you have like a Kevin Durant or somebody really tall, they can just shoot over him. Haywood cannot impact those kinds of fours, the really tall shooting four. A Lauri Markkanen, a Michael Porter Jr. from the Nuggets, like, nah. And then similarly, Caleb, both undersized from a height perspective and a weight perspective. We saw how that worked out last year. And then Jovic, I still like some of the stuff I see from Jovic, but dude looks really raw, still looks young, still doesn't look like he knows how to use his body, and he might be a year or two away. So Heat, I mean, this was kind of the low-key thing because all the attention got focused onto Lowry and the point guard position, but the Heat still didn't really come up with an answer for the power forward spot, when last year that was their biggest problem. So it's now that the point guard position is taken care of, we can now go back to focusing on the power forward spot. So for this, I think the Heat would want to do some sort of consolidation trade where they send like 2 or 3 players to get one back. And that's all. They might just have to do that anyway from a salary stacking standpoint to make sure that the money matches. I have not gotten to look at too many options off the top of my head. I know I like PJ Washington from Charlotte, and they've done some trading with Charlotte already, so maybe they could circle back around for that. But my main thing, I want to really focus this more for the segment next week, just some trade targets the Heat could do. Because the trade deadline is a week from this Thursday. So that makes a good time next week. We can talk about the trade deadline and then cross our fingers and hope something happens the few days after I do the podcast. So to finish this part up, seven-game losing streak sucks. Really makes you question a lot of the things that you're doing. And yeah, I just hope that it ends sooner than later. Moving on now to finish up this episode. As usual, let's take a look at the injury report. The only names listed on there for Miami, the Drew Smith that's been there all season, sadly. And then Duncan Robinson just listed day-to-day with illness. So this is as healthy as the Heat have been all year long until somebody twists an ankle in the next game. But just to say, right now, let's enjoy the health. So the game plan for the Heat, they have one more home game Wednesday, one road game on Friday, and then they return for a four-game homestand. So still some opportunities to win at home and try to not only break the streak, but maybe even get on a winning streak again. The Heat will start their week hosting the Sacramento Kings this Wednesday. This is the Kings team that has a 27-18 overall record, and this will be the first meeting that Miami will have with the Western Conference team, so they'll play two times this year. I think the other one's in a few weeks or something like that. Looking at the injury report for the Kings, the only name on there was Vezinkov. I think I kind of recognize that name, but I'm just not familiar with him, so I'm not going to comment whether that's a good or a bad injury. What I do know for the Kings, the players to watch out for, De'Aaron Fox. Honestly, I would not be surprised if De'Aaron Fox just completely lights us up. He's a lightning-fast guard that the Heat usually have, which are the kind of guards that the Heat have problems with, unless maybe a Terry Rozier got his foot speed up. And Fox can shoot really well. I think he's just under like 30 points a game. So again, don't be surprised if De'Aaron Fox is just blowing by the Heat constantly and has like a 35 or 40 point game. And then the other real big player that I watch out for on the Kings, Domantas Sabonis, great rebounder, great playmaker. Yeah, he could give Bam some issues on both ends of the, well, sorry, mainly on the defensive end with Bam defending him. Sabonis as a defender does not have a very great reputation, so maybe Bam could try to take advantage of that. Looking at the stats for the Kings, they're currently 14th in offensive rating, 17th in defensive rating, 11th in pace. The pace part was a little interesting. I thought they'd be a little bit higher than that. Things that they are good at, 6th in field goal attempts, so they get a lot of field goal attempts up. 3rd in three-point attempts, most of those field goal attempts they get up are from 3. 5th in assists, do a really good job zipping the ball around. Goes back to like Sabonis. Like, you have really good playmakers both at the point guard with Fox and at the center with Sabonis. Makes a lot of sense. 5th in assists. And all those good things combine into being 9th in points per game. So, really great offense. Miami's had troubles with really great offenses that could get bad. Things that the Kings do bad themselves. 22nd in personal fouls, 19th in opponent free throw attempts. So you got Jimmy, you got Bam. Maybe that could be an area that they can exploit, try to get to the line, grind things down a little bit, get some easy points. And then they are also 13th in opponent three-point attempts while being 29th in opponent three-point percentage. So Miami should be able to get some looks up. And if they can convert enough from three while also getting to the free throw line, maybe they can keep pace with the Kings. So the storyline for this game, like I've already mentioned a few times already, the Heat have had difficulties against high-scoring teams, so can they do any better against this Kings team and snap their losing streak, or is it going to go to 8? After the Kings on Wednesday, the Heat will go to the Wizards this Friday. This is a Wizards team that currently has a 9-37 overall record. The Heat are up 1-0 in a best-of-four series against this division opponent. The one win was... yeah, that was actually the game that kicked off the 7-game win streak back in November. So, hey, yeah, maybe we could turn this around. That'd be nice. looking at the injury report for the Wizards, there's just somebody named Livers. I'm not familiar with his game either. For players to watch out for, it's the Wizards. I guess Kyle Kuzma. He's been a solid scorer, maybe not necessarily efficient. Similarly, Jordan Poole. You can put the ball in the basket sometimes. That's about all I got there. Move on to stats. Looking at the stats, this is a Wizards team that's 25th in offensive rating, 27th in defensive rating, but first in pace. So bad on both ends of the court, but do they get their cardio in? Things that they do great. 8th in field goal attempts, makes sense with pace. 6th in two-point attempts, makes sense with pace. 5th in opponent turnovers. So they do good, do at least a decent job of getting the opponent to turn over. That's one other good thing. Bad. Well, lots of bad. So kind of take your pick. 30th in opponent points. 30th in opponent rebounding. 30th in opponent assists. So points, rebounds, assists, dead last. Should be a good thing for Miami. And then they're 27th in opponent field goal percentage and opponent two-point percentage. So Heat should have an easier time scoring on them. And for the storyline of this game, if not against the Kings on Wednesday, then the Heat have to pick up this win to end the streak. If they lose again, like if they lose against the Kings to make it 8, and then against the Wizards to make it 9, shit's going to get real dark real fast. We're going to see, like, I'm not even going to bother with Heat Twitter or Heat Reddit, because it's just going to be throwing everybody in the trade machine at that point. So please pick up an easy win against the Wizards. This is the one easy, surefire win of the week. It doesn't get any easier from there. The Heat will finish off this week hosting the Los Angeles Clippers this Sunday. This is a Clippers team that has a 30-15 overall record. Heat down 0-1 after getting just waxed at the start of January when they were at the Clippers. Injury report for them, I don't know if I'm saying that first name right. I know it's the last name. Zubats is out several weeks. That's their starting center. And usually I have a good amount of respect for Zubats. I think he's at least a solid starting center. So that could be beneficial for Bam Adebayo. Players to watch out for on the Clippers. The Kawhi PG wing combo is just nasty. Can't really play too far off of one. James Harden, I really do got to give him credit for being the lead playmaker and getting everything settled for the Clippers. And then Russell Westbrook off the bench, just good spark plug. And lots of athleticism still at his age. So Clippers really do have a star-studded top of their roster to watch out for. Looking at stats for the Clippers, they're 4th in offensive rating, 11th defensive rating, 26th in pace. Things that they're good at, 1st in three-point percentage, 5th in field goal percentage, while 6th in opponent field goal percentage, and being 5th in steals. So they shoot really well, and they make sure the opponent doesn't shoot really well. Pretty good formula for winning. Oh, and then, you know, poke out and get some steals where you can. Things that they do badly, though, they are, 5th in field goal percentage, they're 25th in field goal attempts. So they run more of a slower, methodical game, hunt for the great shot, not the good shot, and then convert them at a high rate, which leads into the high field goal percentage, and ultimately being 4th in offensive rating. So, like, it works. It definitely works. They're also 22nd in opponent offensive rebounding, so they're not going to give Miami a lot of opportunities. They're really just, like, not bad at anything. Like, in terms of the things that they were great at, there are a few things that they're really great at, but there's like nothing consistently that I pieced together to see something that they're bad at. So storyline for this game, the Clippers are an elite team. Will the Heat have figured something out by that Sunday, or is this potentially going to start another losing streak? Or if in the worst case scenario, could this be a 10-game losing streak with the Clippers coming in? Obviously, I hope that's not the situation. I hope we're on a 3-game winning streak by the time I talk about this next week. So, after the Clippers on Sunday, the Heat will continue their homestand the following Tuesday as the trade deadline looms. So, next week we'll do recap. Look at the trade deadline, see if there's any targets that Miami could go after, and then look ahead to the usual games. So for now, I do thank you for hanging around. A little bit of a longer episode, but had a bit more to cover. That'll be all, though. So please, if you can, follow the pod off of X/Twitter at Heaters Heating and myself at KBR Heat Culture. Also, check out the other great pods we have at OTG Basketball, Celtics Wire, Brooklyn Buzz, Full Access Pacers. Links for everything are in the show notes, as usual. So I'll be back next week. Until then, stay positive. I hope you all have a great one. Heat Nation.